U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Twitter begins fact-checking presidential tweets. The White House threatens to pull the Republican National Convention out of North Carolina. And House Republicans sue over proxy voting. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. Sitting in today for Paul Jugot, we are joined today by my colleagues, Bill McGurn. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Kyle. How you doing?
And Jason Willick. Hi, Jason.
Hi.
Let's start with the tweets that have gotten most attention in the past few days. President Trump has essentially been insinuating that the MSNBC host Joe Scarborough might have been involved in the death of a young woman who worked for him in 2001. When Scarborough was in Congress, he had a young female staffer who died, and the investigation concluded that she had had a heart condition and fallen and hit her head. And here's Trump tweeting on May 12th, I believe, quote, "When will they open a cold case on the psycho Joe Scarborough matter in Florida? Did he get away with murder? Some people think so. Why did he leave Congress so quietly and quickly? Isn't it obvious what's happening now? A total nut job," unquote. The president has doubled down on that, tweeting again about it recently. But Bill, what are average people supposed to make of this?
I don't know what average people are supposed to make, but look, it's part of the package with Trump. A lot of his supporters, you know, like his policies, think he's doing a generally good job, also think he's being treated unfairly, but they just do not understand why you would, you know, insinuate that someone is involved with possibly a murder when there's no evidence for this at all. You know, I'm sure a lot of his most enthusiastic supporters don't care, but I don't see this as helping Donald Trump. I think it's deliberate on his part. I think he thinks about it and thinks, well, they've told an awful lot of lies about me, so I'm going to give them a taste of their own medicine. I'm not sure how practically wise that is, whether that helps you, especially in election year with the marginal voters that may not like you, but you're trying to get them to pull the switch for you.
Yeah, and Twitter, I think, has taken the position that whatever public officials like the president say is inherently newsworthy to some degree, and they're getting some pressure on that now. The widower of the Scarborough aide has written to Twitter's CEO, Jack Dorsey, asking him to take down these tweets, and here's a quote from that letter. He says, "These conspiracy theorists, including most recently the President of the United States, continue to spread their bile and misinformation on your platform, disparaging the memory of my wife and our marriage." He goes on to say, "An ordinary user like me would be banished from the platform for such a tweet, but I'm only asking that these tweets be removed," unquote. Is that something, Jason, that you think Twitter ought to think about?
I think it's certainly a moving letter, and I mean, I'm sure that the family of the woman, it's a very miserable experience for them to have the president tweeting about her in this way. I mean, it's really nasty. I don't think Twitter should take down the tweets. I think it sets a terrible precedent for them to start taking down tweets, because the demand will then be for other tweets to be taken down. Why didn't you take down this one? Are you saying that this one is okay? Why don't you take down my opponent's tweets? And I just think, the First Amendment, you know, Twitter isn't bound by the First Amendment, but the First Amendment, there's wisdom in the idea that you can say hateful things, and that's protected speech, because the alternative is having an authority referee this kind of discourse, and it's just going to get so ugly for the platform if it tries to do that. So I feel for the family, but I don't think that that Twitter should be in the business of taking down newsworthy items. I think that's a bad road to go down.
But to play devil's advocate here a little bit, I mean, Twitter has some sort of rules, community standards, and barring harassment. And if you are a nobody who is one of the conspiracists who believe the Sandy Hook shooting didn't happen, and you're tweeting at parents and and doing stuff like that. I mean, it seems likely to me that you would get those tweets taken down or banned. So, I mean, does it matter here, Bill, that it's the president who is doing this? Does that create sort of a double standard in that whatever the president says is newsworthy?
I think we've already seen the double standard in the way big social platforms like Twitter or Facebook censor certain people. I'm with Jason. I don't think the president's tweets should be. I think they were outrageous, but I'd rather the American people make that call, you know, in November, evaluate it along with the rest of the president, decide whether he pays the price for it. The problem with all these things about censoring or deleting is who gets to do that? You have people complaining all the time that someone on the right gets their thing censored and doesn't happen to someone on the left. I think there's even a complaint about the person at Twitter who's in charge of the site integrity being a big Trump opponent. So I don't think, personally, I don't think that's the way to go. I think if the president puts out something stupid, let it stay there and let people see it. I think the effort to kind of sanitize Twitter from all this is backfiring. I don't think it's working very well and may cause as much rancor as whatever is being posted there. You know, look, it's supposed to be a town square, not a newspaper, and it's regulated as such. They have the right to, doesn't mean they can't pick out things they find particularly egregious, but I think we've seen this is not assuaging feelings and it's not contributing to a more peaceful experience.
But what I'm trying to ask, I guess, is would you extend that principle to the no-name tweeter who is tweeting conspiracies about Sandy Hook? Or does that fall into the egregious category?
No, I would extend it because I think if it's supposed to be a town square, let the town cranks come on the town square too. That's what I'm saying. I think it's been unworkable, this effort to decide who's going to be censored, who's going to be deleted. We see people being deleted or censored or whatever you want to call it for all sorts of ridiculous reasons. I practically don't think it could be done. In theory, it can be done. That here's the line and if you go over it, but I'm not sure practically it can be done. And I think for, especially if social media is meant to empower ordinary people, if they're all going to be taken down and the president's going to stay up, I don't think it's really having that effect.
But Jason, just to play devil's advocate a little bit more, I mean, doesn't there have to be some line somewhere? I mean, Twitter takes down jihadism. There are platforms that don't allow nudity and they police nudity. And so maybe it's harder to draw a line with purely word-based political speech, even if it's conspiracy theories. But there's a line somewhere that all of these platforms have drawn and are trying to police.
Yeah, I agree with Bill that, you know, if it was up to me, if I was one of these companies, I would probably lean less hard into this moderation efforts because they do lead to charges of bias. But I agree with you. There's going to be pornography that's taken down. There's going to be certain libelous stuff that's taken down, even beyond what is First Amendment protected. These companies are going to moderate to some extent. That said, to your question about the president versus an anonymous person, I do think there's a difference in that the president's tweets are a news story. They're a global news story. So even if, you know, a random Twitter user was going to violate the Twitter rules, that's one thing. But it is true that if it's the president, then you're getting yourself in the position of censoring the news and taking down what's newsworthy and what the world wants to know about. So I do think that it's reasonable for companies actually to draw somewhat of a line with public figures versus non-public figures as exists in the First Amendment and other ways.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of The Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. On a slightly different, slightly softer maybe subject, not taking down specifically, there's also a question of trying to fact check some of these tweets. And on Tuesday, Twitter for the first time moved to fact check one of President Trump's tweets. As states moved to expand mail voting, Trump had tweeted that it would inevitably be, quote, substantially fraudulent, unquote, and saying that California had decided to send ballots to, quote, anyone living in the state, unquote. And now next to those tweets, there's a hazard symbol urging the user to get the facts. And if you click that, you get to a page that says, here's some fact checking by Twitter, quote, fact checkers say there's no evidence that mail-in ballots are linked to voter fraud, unquote. And then it says that Trump's claim about California is false since not everyone is getting a ballot, only registered voters. Bill, what do you make of that attempt to referee the debate?
Again, I'm skeptical of it. I'm not sure I see what it adds to this. I think, again, it's all fraught with questions of who is deciding what.
Yeah, and I think some of these questions are harder calls than they're inevitably made out to be. I mean, on California, it seems to me that Twitter is right and Trump is wrong. But on the question of voter fraud, I mean, there's not widespread evidence of mail voter fraud, but there's at least one instance in 2018 in North Carolina. A House election was thrown out, Jason, after an operative there was accused of collecting absentee ballots illegally. Somebody testified that there were incomplete ballots that were collected that were then filled in. The idea of fact checking is that all of these questions are clear yes, no answers. And it seems like that's not always the case.
Yeah, no, the idea that Twitter is going to swoop in to flag one tweet that the president made, and it decided that what was beyond the pale was his remarks about mail-in ballots seems ridiculous because, of course, as we've written in editorials, this is a complicated policy issue. And we want to hear different perspectives on a complicated policy issue. This is definitely not a black and white issue. And just one more thing on Twitter adding fact checks when it's saying, you know, this tweet by this politician is false. Are they then saying that, a tweet that they don't say is false is true? You could argue that people are supposed to be skeptical of things that they read from politicians. But now if they are depending on Twitter to flag for them things that they shouldn't believe, then they'll be less discerning when they should be. So I just think Twitter gets itself into a horrible position. And this was a particularly strange intervention because, as you said, this is a complicated issue of public policy.
Yeah, I agree with Jason. Also, I mean, what I was saying before about who is the authority, one of the problems we have a profusion of things like PolitiFact that are out there to establish the facts, cut through all the partisan nonsense on both sides and come up with the truth. But inevitably, they have shown their own political biases in a host of ways. Who checks the fact checkers? You know, who fact checks fact checkers? And so I think that these things are bound to fail for that. And many of the complaints about the so-called fact checkers is that they are biased and not honest themselves.
Well, and also there's just the question of who they rely on, especially when there are claims made about the future, about a plan that a politician is proposing and what it will do. The famous instance of Barack Obama's claim, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor, which was rated true before it was rated false. And Jason, to your point earlier, it seems to me that this is just going to raise demands from everyone that their opponents be fact-checked. I mean, President Trump's critics will say, you know, what about that tweet? That tweet's wrong. That tweet's wrong. President Trump's supporters will say, you know, what about when Bernie Sanders tweets that Medicare for All is going to save the country tons of money? Or what about some of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's tweets? There was one a couple years ago where she said that Pentagon waste could fund most of Medicare for All. And I mean, it seems like there will be this policy that Twitter is trying to dip its toe in the water with is going to make nobody happy, it seems to me.
Yeah, what it's going to do is it's going to suck Twitter into the political debate. Twitter is going to become a punching bag for people on both sides who want their opponents to have their remarks fact check. As we were saying about authority, I think, you know, we're being told, you know, we're going to listen to things only that experts say. But the problem is a lot of the public has lost faith in things that experts say on certain issues, sometimes rightly, sometimes wrongly. So when you have Twitter trying to put some muscle behind this, I do wonder if it's just going to contribute more to this feeling that, you know, we're being silenced and you know, make people less trusting and ultimately, you know, dilute these platforms if they go into this too hard.
And does it in some sense play into Donald Trump's hands? I mean, he's now pulling out the free speech martyr card. I don't quite buy that because nobody has the right to use Twitter servers, just as nobody has the right to publish on the newspaper op-ed page. But Trump is tweeting, and he's tweeting that, so you can take that as ironic if you want it, but he's tweeting that Twitter is, quote, interfering in the 2020 presidential election. He's saying that Republicans feel social media platforms totally silence conservative voices. We will strongly regulate or close them down before we ever allow this to happen, unquote. And there are some Republicans who have raised the idea of a sort of social media fairness doctrine bill.
Right. Well, I think that's because, as Jason said, these issues are going to come up again. These social media platforms are regulated differently from, say, a newspaper, where you are liable for the content you print, right? And so people do weed out stuff all the time, make editorial decisions. We're not going to run this simply because we don't like it. The social media is supposed to be somewhat different thing, you know, more like a public platform, but they have to make these decisions too. Again, I'm very skeptical of legislation for this. I just think there are some sensible parameters. You know, you said, like, you know, do we really want jihadis, you know, advertising for people on Twitter and so forth and pornography. On the other hand, it's very hard to draw those distinctions. And I think we should go into that, recognizing the difficulty that it's very hard to draw the distinction. So we have this nice civilized town square without excluding people that really shouldn't be excluded.
Yeah, I mean, that's why, I guess, in my view, the only party that can do that is Twitter. They own the platform. They're the one who has to draw the distinctions, and then they have to live with the criticism and user departures if that's what it comes to. Switching gears a little bit, the Republican National Convention is supposed to be held in Charlotte, North Carolina in August, but the pandemic has thrown a wrench into that. Trump said Tuesday that he will give the Democratic governor there, Roy Cooper, 1 week to decide whether the convention can go on with full attendance, or else he's threatened to pull out. And Georgia and Florida have both expressed interest in hosting. The Charlotte Observer, for its part, the editorial board is urging the governor to call the president's bluff. Jason, what do you make of this dust up?
I'm not really sure. I think if the, you know, if Georgia is a swing state, then the president will be in trouble, and he's better off with North Carolina as a swing state rather than Georgia. But I think he's trying to throw his weight, as he does in sort of a blunt way, behind the reopenings. I think that the reopenings are ongoing, and we're just going to have to see how that plays out to see how it works for the president politically.
Well, I guess two questions that strike me are one, it seems like moving an event this big so close to the date that it's supposed to happen would be a huge logistical challenge. But also, Bill, I mean, isn't the convention these days just kind of a pony show? And the whole point is not to be there, but to put it on TV.
I think that's true. I think there's an added factor here. I think my impression is that the Democrats are not going to hold a big in-person convention, right, because of COVID-19. And I think the Republicans want to make the opposite point by holding such a convention. So I think that's operating there as well. Look, the RNC is a private organization. It can decide what it wants to do, where it wants to have its conventions. And if the governor of North Carolina makes a decision, he has to accept the consequences of the decision. So it's just an interesting back and forth. And I think there are a lot of things behind there freighted. Jason mentioned North Carolina as a swing state. I mean, that's another consideration. It will be interesting to see how it turns out. It's, you know, it's also easy for the editorial board down in Charlotte to call the bluff. I mean, they're not the ones that are going to lose money from all the, you know, all the activities that a convention brings and all the sales and so forth. You know, I don't think the governor will be quite as casual as in his decision, whatever, you know, whatever he decides about that.
All right. Then finally, some legal wrangling over proxy voting in Congress. So the House had modified its rules for the length of the pandemic or during the pandemic so that somebody who's not a congresswoman who's not in Washington can file a letter of some kind and say, this person who is in D.C. has my vote and can vote on my behalf. I believe it's up to one person can proxy vote for up to 10 people. And the House, I think, is planning to use that to pass some legislation later this week. And Republicans are objecting. Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader, and about 20 other Republicans have sued, saying that this is unconstitutional. Bill, what do you make of that?
Again, I don't know that it's unconstitutional, but it's just going to be another one of these things that plays out in a, you know, in a highly politicized year.
Well, the question I take it is, Jason, whether when there's when the Constitution says, for instance, that Congress shall assemble, be present, whether someone on Zoom can possibly be counted in that.
Yeah, no, that's going to be an interesting originalist sort of argument. What did the Constitution mean by present? And in terms of in a pandemic with all this digital technology, they couldn't have envisioned. My bias is that, you know, Congress should not be going away and doing this proxy voting, because they're going to then do it all the time, and legislators are just going to be shirking their responsibilities in Washington, not going to committee meetings. They're going to be voting by proxy from home. So on the merits, I'm sympathetic with the Republican suit that says, look, you know, we can be in Washington. We can do our jobs. You know, that's pretty important.
Kyle, I'd add one thing to Jason's thing. My bias is in the same way. And also part of it is because of debate. You know, what you're seeing now is an effort to kind of push things through without a lot of debate, because they're not all assembled there. I just saw Devin Nunes on TV at the Capitol saying he hasn't seen a single Democrat there today, you know, as we're considering FISA and all these big issues. And I think there's something to bringing people together to have a debate, to have a robust debate that takes time, rather than just have people, you know, talk a little bit as we're doing over a connection and then press a button casting a vote. So I'm not sure if a lawsuit is the way to handle it, but I do think that there's something lost when people do not come together and debate the issues important to the American people.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Jason. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later this week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.